So I'm not Susan Philibert. She's very apologetic that she can't be here. She was one of the individuals who couldn't fly out because of the result of the storm. She's been perfectly fine, but there are no airplanes going to New York or back to here yet. So she really sends you her warmest regards. And we have the pleasure of working with Susan on the research that I'm going to present to you. Actually, there are two papers, and for some of you who are hunting and go between sessions, I've reversed it, partly because Susan and I felt that the first paper is more of the overview paper, and then the second one will go into greater depth. Wayne did ask me for something personal, and that is, first, I'm just delighted to see so many dear colleagues from the Bixby Center for Global Reproductive Health, and and colleagues from Guttmacher and Child Friends as well. It's a small community that we all work very closely together in alignment. And Wayne pointed out in the business or the award ceremony that I'm celebrating my 40th anniversary as an APHA member of this section. And it's also the 40th anniversary of the Institute for Health Policy Studies that I direct. And it's also my wedding anniversary of 40 years. So this must be some alignment of various factors. So enough of the personal, but I just thought that there's something. Now, my anniversary is not until December 17th, so I always tell my husband we can't count 40 until we get to that date because, you know, something could happen. My peers on this panel have done a really nice job of giving an overview. And then we microscoped down to Baltimore. And now I'm going to go back up to thinking about the areas of, in the first paper, about the role of ACOG standards and what is going on with the provision of these kinds of care around LARC. And it strikes me that one of the big issues around issues like evidence and evidence-based practices, and the IOM has done a variety of studies on this, is the very long time it takes for data to actually be incorporated into our own practice. So the results of this initial first study, and I'll consolidate the methodology from the two papers, so there won't be a repetition, and I'll save some time for questions. There are no financial conflicts of interest. And as has already been discussed, you know, IUDs, implants, long-acting contraceptives have been shown to be very effective, convenient, relatively few complaints about the side effects, but still very low use. And even though we've now reached 8.5% in 2009, we see that really the rise has been really relatively small from 2.4 between 2002 and 2009. If you compare ourselves to countries like China, where 41% of women are using it, and in Norway, where 27% are using it, you can see that we really have a lot of room to grow. There have been a number of studies, a number of you have been leaders in this field, and we see definitely the important role that LARCs can play in terms of avoiding repeat pregnancies among adolescents, and the high level of patient satisfaction and thus a very high continuation rate. So what's the problem? One, obviously, that we've talked about in a bit, it really has to do with cost, and cost. So when the cost barrier is removed, such as the test in St. Louis, it really makes a big difference. And in the research that the Philibert group and our Bixby group is doing together, and in fact, two of our colleagues here are Abigail Ahrens and Antonia Biggs, who are part of my team. In our evaluation of two initiatives that are taking place in Iowa and Colorado, we have noted that actually when cost is removed, when access to these contraceptives are available, it really does remove barriers. That's not the purpose of the talk today, but it will be the purpose of several papers that will be being written in the near future. Now, we also know the cost effectiveness really deals with the fact that there's that initial cash outlay, which really outstrips a monthly pack of pills, which has often been a tremendous barrier. And also, we see tremendous variations in terms of providers and providers' perspectives. So a recent study of primary care doctors in South Carolina showed that in a family medicine residency, they actually had fairly limited knowledge use, and only about 90% of the sample had inserted fewer than 10 per year. So clearly, the group that is now graduating themselves are not necessarily gaining all the skill sets that they really need to be able to be proficient and to be able to really take leadership role. Now, some suggest that the providers do not use LARC because there's this sort of sense that women should be, quote-unquote, earn their IUDs after having failed at other contraceptive methods. That is, if the provider is concerned about the cost of the method, and so consequently they often say, well, I think you should be using the pill or you should be using another method first, and then when those things don't work, finally they get to the point because there's a sense of, I would say, call mistrust. There's also this whole sense about then that it often can become the method of last resort. And I think a challenge for all of us in this room and as professionals in the area of population and reproductive health is how do we start to change some of this negative image, because clearly it's a negative image about women that is a stereotype. Colleagues who are, several of you who are here, Joe Spidell and Cynthia just left for a moment, but Wayne is here, developed a paper on the kinds of barriers even within the Family Pact. So even when you have a state like California that Richard talked about, where 61% of practices say that family planning, long-acting contraceptive methods are available, only about two-thirds, 60%, actually reported they felt comfortable inserting Paragard, and only 40% felt very comfortable inserting Mariana. So in this presentation, we report data from 159 and 114 providers and family planning clinics in Colorado and Iowa. This is part of a larger evaluation that we've been collaborating on with Philibert and Associates. And this, these two initiatives are funded by an anonymous foundation, and it's a very comprehensive strategy. So the foundation is working with a number of agencies, particularly Title X, to eliminate barriers to making access to these contraceptive methods, but they're also working a lot on training, they're working on community outreach, education of the public, and a very strong policy component. So we are really trying to delve deeper into how all these diverse pieces link together and create a synergy that can be even more effective. And in the presentation that I'll share with you now, we actually have conducted surveys of clinicians. So 3 to 5 clinicians per site participated, and these were all clinicians that had the opportunity for inserting IUD. So I won't repeat this part for the second presentation. So they could be physicians, nurse midwives, nurse practitioners, PAs. And we asked also very specifically about 3 different types of LARCs, Paragard, Mirena, and Implanon. And then we also asked very specific sub-questions around 20 very different scenarios. So describing different women for these 3 different methods of LARC, what kinds of variation are there in terms of this kind of endeavor. And then, as I shared previously, we're going to use the framework of the ACOG guidelines to see how consistent are practitioners right now in these states acting on these guidelines, and where are the knowledge gaps of being able to implement evidence. So a number of you recognize that ACOG has really supported LARCs for women, and that there are really few counterindications. And that the postpartum period is particularly favorable time for IUDs or implant insertions. But among our providers, the percent agreeing that immediate postpartum prior to discharge insertion is suitable and safe, you can see that there's been some improvements between the year 2010 and 2012, for Mirena, for example, going from 37% to 50%. and a bit of an improvement for the Paragard, but we still are not reaching the kinds of critical tipping points that are really necessary. There's also been guidelines from ACOG around the availability or the acceptability of using IUDs or implants immediately, either after an abortion or a miscarriage. And again, among these providers, what we found in the post-abortion, prior to leaving the clinic and surgeon, is that there's been a good increase from 63% to 72%, similarly for both, but there's been an interesting decrease in the implanon, and we're not quite sure why exactly this trend is happening for that. ACOG has also indicated that their LARCs are very acceptable for women who've experienced or are at risk for an ectopic pregnancy or have had a previous history of such a pregnancy. And again, our providers, where were they on this? And we find that there's been a positive increase from about 79% or 76% to 85%, indicating that it is acceptable. And again, these are different scenarios that we asked about them. And then following up on the experiences that we've just heard about in Baltimore, what about the use of LARCs for nulliparous and adolescents? Should they be offered? And ACOG again indicates that this is a very safe methods that can be used. So when we studied what the providers were saying for the nulliparous and for the teens, and here we define teenagers as 15 to 19-year-olds, we see that there have been a statistically significant difference in the area of Mirena between 2010 and 2012. And again, this reflects some of the activities and efforts underway in these two states to increase the level of knowledge and understanding among these providers. And similarly, for Paragard, there's been a statistically significant improvement for nulliparous, but not for teens. So clearly, there are areas of agreement for ACOG and these providers in the areas of women with previous STIs or young adults ages 20 to 29. But among the nurses in our sample, we found that they were actually more conservative than the physicians. So for example, while 7% thought immediate postpartum insertion was suitable and safe, the physicians, half of the physicians, felt it was safe to do it at that time. And only 73% thought teens could have a LARC, and again, doctors were much more, quote-unquote, liberal about indicating that teenagers should be having access. So again, you can see that the potential implication for this finding is that depending upon who serves the patient may influence the kind of messaging that may occur in a clinic. So we have some good data, good news about improvements over time. And clearly there's a role for ACOG and other national organizations to close this gap, including Wayne's organization. And one of the barriers is how do we eliminate the cost barrier, and hopefully under the ACA with the elimination of copayment if the ACA is fully implemented and all the methods, FDA methods, are actually fully implemented in terms of LARCs, that some of this routine stock issue may be hopefully eliminated over time. Now, another issue that we've uncovered from some of our qualitative research really has to do with the challenge of not having adequate reimbursement for providers at the period of postpartum and post-ab. So many providers say, I don't get anything special or extra for inserting it at the time. And I think that this is a small area, but a very important area that could potentially be a policy win if we really focus on this in terms of advocacy. And clearly, education for all those doing counseling is necessary, that is, the nurses, nurse practitioners. When there's variation by discipline, that could also be counter-positive within a clinic setting. So, to end, we all recognize that our country has an unacceptable level of unintended pregnancy, and that providers really need to see these as methods of preference on the dimensions of safety, effectiveness, and convenience if we're going to be making a change. But clearly, that's only one part of the formula. The other part really has to do with how do we educate our clients around their concerns around safety and long-term infertility and potentially misunderstandings or fear of insertion. If the doctor, clinician, provider isn't feeling like a champion, then the challenges of being able to provide this kind of information and education in a clinical setting is going to be compromised. So we definitely understand that it takes two to tango. Thank you very much.